everyone, welcome to the newest or the latest edition of the Sight Screen Cricket Journal podcast. Lots to talk about today. We're going to be reviewing a thrilling series between Bangladesh and the West Indies. As ever, I have two fantastic guests with me. Firstly, I'd like to introduce, I'd like to welcome him back, actually, someone who's been on before. It's Mr. Johnny Barron, international cricket commentator, broadcaster. He's actually been doing lots of work for Flow Sports in the Caribbean covering this test. So welcome back, Johnny.
Hi, guys.
Great to have you back on. And also, I'd like to introduce a very special guest, someone coming all the way from Dhaka in Bangladesh. He's commentated, actually, if you were watching the latest series, he's been commentating for T-Sports. He's also an international broadcaster and indeed a journalist. So welcome all the way from Dhaka, Mr. Mazharuddin Umi. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me.
Great to have you both on today. So as I was saying, I think there's lots to talk about, lots to unpick in terms of the test series that we've just seen. Johnny, I just wanted to come to you first in terms of your general impressions of the series. My take on it was that it was actually a really thrilling series between two quite evenly matched teams, although I think they had like quite obvious weaknesses and obvious flaws, but they were, I think, evenly matched. And overall, I think West Indies were successful by winning those key moments. But Johnny, just interesting to hear your views on the series overall.
It was one of those test series that could, unless you were involved in watching and were absorbed from either a West Indies perspective or from a Bangladesh perspective, it's one of those test series that could just have disappeared to the back pages of Crick Info and just almost be ignored by the wider cricket community. Oh, how wrong we could possibly be. It was a brilliant test series. Both games could have gone in either direction, of course, with the West Indies with the highest ever chase in Asia of 395. Then, of course, in the second match, Bangladesh were within a whisker of really getting home. 17 runs they were short. It was two brilliant games of cricket on two fantastic surfaces. Absolutely brilliant for Test cricket. Probably, to be honest, I'd imagine Bangladesh wouldn't have minded the surfaces turning a little more, to be perfectly honest. I know Dhaka, historically, has done a little more than it did. But I just thought it was brilliant for the game of Test cricket, a thrill to watch. And, wow, what a fantastic series of Test cricket.
Absolutely, absolutely agree. And I think, as you say, the close margins of victory, I guess, for the West Indies in both of those games kind of allude to how evenly matched the sides were. But Omibai, I wanted to come to you. Obviously, Bangladesh ended up losing the series 2-0. Lots of reasons that we can kind of cover for why they lost the series. Obviously, team selection was a big issue. The fact that they only played one pace bowler throughout the whole series, Shakib's injury, the pitch preparation, the captaincy, we could go on and on. If you had to pick one single factor for the main reason why Bangladesh lost the series, what would that be?
I think it's the approach, how you see Test cricket, and the way they have been banking on the rank turner pitches to favor the spinners and adding just one specialist seamer in the lineup, that actually doesn't make any sense. Yeah, you bank on your spinners and try to utilize the home condition, but I don't think in the long run, when you go abroad, when you play in pitches like New Zealand, South Africa, England, or even Australia, you go struggle there, can't face the fast bowlers. Even your fast bowlers are not experienced enough to bowl a longer spells in such conditions. So I think a Bangladesh selection panel needs to figure out, yes, they got 18-member squad and there are five fast bowlers in the squad, but eventually you can see only one seamer in the lineup. So actually, does it promote your fast bowling attack? Does it promote the youngsters or encourage the youngsters to play and become a fast bowler in future in Bangladesh? So that will be a good question. Yeah, Bangladesh have managed to win Australia or England at their home soil using those tactics. But I think time has come that the team like Bangladesh needs to use their strength more on fast bowling, utilize the pitches more when they go abroad. And I think even the abroad teams, when they visit Bangladesh now, or even in the subcontinent, they're prepared about the ranked tennis surfaces. So it's important that how you develop your culture and how the players actually see the test cricket all around. It's not just about one day cricket or limited over cricket, that mostly the spectators also like to see boundaries and sixes. So this is the area we need to focus on. It's been 20 years now. We are yet to become a solid test unit, rather than we more focus on limited over formats, which I think it needs to be changed, especially in the mentality of the players.
I think you're absolutely right, Omibai. I think, yeah, there needs to be a more progressive outlook in terms of test cricket. And I think you're right. I think the whole kind of domestic infrastructure, cricket infrastructure, is more geared towards white ball cricket. I think that's quite clear as well. Also, I was actually really disappointed in terms of the second test. I was pleased that they picked Abu Jayed Rahi. I thought he deserved a chance, and he did really well. He got 6 wickets in that match as well. But what I was really disappointed about, I thought Mustafiz actually played okay in that first test. Okay, he only picked up 2 wickets. He bowled a pretty good spell in the West Indies second innings as well. But you know, as we know, they didn't pick him, and they just went with the one pacer as it turned out. Johnny, just interested in your take around the whole sort of spin-heavy attack that Bangladesh have pursued during the series.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you look historically at Bangladesh at home, and across the last 5 years, they've been very effective. Just one series win in that period of time. Australia have come to Bangladesh and haven't won. India didn't win in their last test match. South Africa didn't win there either. England, of course, you know, didn't win in that extraordinary one-all series. It's become a pretty tough place to win. Yes, Afghanistan, of course, won the one-off test match last year. But we can't really read too much into those one-off tests. And the reality is, if you're going to play a four-pronged spin attack, you want a pitch really like the one we've just seen in Chennai in India that breaks up from ball one and offers assistance from the off, because otherwise you are going to struggle. And I, like you, I was very surprised that the Fizz didn't get a run out of the second test. He's an outstanding cricketer. You know, he's much valued in the white ball game, but he's a really effective red ball cricketer. And I think, you know, one of the reasons, you know, that was given for his non-selection was about, you know, the issues they had of actually keeping on the pitch. He had suffered a couple of warnings, of course, in Chottogram, and that was a great fear. But you know, to leave a player out on whether he might run onto the danger area does seem a little draconian. I thought in that first spell, I thought he bowled superbly.
I would totally agree with that, Johnny. Omibai, just coming back to you in terms of team selection, looking at the batting selections for a second. So obviously, I think there were a couple of players that really struggled in the top order. Actually, I think for both teams, I would say that the top order didn't really click. It was more the middle order that kind of performed for both teams. So for Bangladesh, primarily Litin Das, Mominal scored some runs in the first test, and obviously Mehdi Hasan scored that century as well. I wanted to focus on the players that didn't do so well. So as we know, Chandu coming in at number 3, a young player, didn't really score very many runs at all through the series. And then also people like Shubha Chaka in the second test, as well as Mohammad Mithun as well. So my question, I guess, to you, Omibai, is I think that there's been a lot, certainly on social media, there's been lots of criticism around those three players, I think, in particular. And lots of people have been saying, well, why didn't someone like Mahmudullah Riyad, why wasn't he selected? My question, I guess, would be, do you think his selection would have made a big difference? And also, you know, we're talking about two or three players there who didn't do well. Do we actually, or in Bangladesh, is there enough talent out there to replace those players who haven't performed very well?
Well, the first question is, who do you replace them? So at the moment, they are the best in the lot. But the way the openers have been performing over the past few matches, And I got to know that the last 59 runs opening stand between Shomo Sharkar and Tamim Iqbal was the first after 14 innings for Bangladesh in the opening stand. So you can realize the situation in the top order. There's no one over the past few years who were able to be the long-term partner for Tamim Iqbal in Test cricket. And number three, we are talking about Nazmul Hasan Shanto. He's been given a lot of opportunities in place of Shakib Al Hasan, who used to have batted number three during the World Cup. And even he had to leave way for Shanto because they wanted Shanto to get the exposure before going to New Zealand. As Shakib won't be touring New Zealand for his personal reasons and expected to give the third child's birth. So that is the reason. But what I want to see that the hunger among the players, like if you get an opportunity, if you get to play a first-class cricket or even a test match cricket. So there's a vast difference between these two, between the domestic cricket and international cricket. So if you play a player like Shanto, who you want you to get settled early on in his international career, my question is, why don't you get him ready in domestic cricket and then make him play? Because international cricket is not just about giving player enough opportunities. At the same time, you want players to perform for your team as well. So one thing Shakib says very well, that there's no senior and junior in the team. All the 11 players are equal and they are meant to perform. So that is the thing that the new guys, the likes of Shomo Sharkar, Miton Kumar Das, Mehdi Hasan Miraj, they have been playing for an international cricket for the past 5 years now. But still, we can't see beyond anyone from Shakib, Tamim, Mushfiq or Mahmudullah Ria. That's the next five. But we say normally that these five are the pillars of Bangladesh cricket and all. But we need to develop the players' mentality as well. So that's important, how you develop your domestic culture, how you see test cricket all around. Because I don't see most of them has that mentality when they go out to bat. If you notice, all the batsmen like Nazmul Hasan Shanto, Shannon Gabriel sets him up, bowls the half ball in the first ball. He drives it for a straight drive for a boundary. And the very next ball, he just grabbed it a bit further back, outside off stump. Shanto went for it again and gave an outside hit to the gully. So that's the way they have been working on their test cricket. I'm talking about Shannon Gabriel and others. But it's our mentality we need to change. And I think we are more on a limited over tempo. Our batsmen are more like to play their shots. But at times, you need to figure out a change in mode when you come from a limited over format to test cricket. That is the area I think the Bangladeshi batters need to work on. And I think the more they play, the better they get. But I think at the same time, you need to develop the regional cricket association and all. Like, I want to see the challenges from the players before getting into the national team, that they had to really fought hard. They have to score around 300, 400, 500, 600, 700, 800 before coming onto the national team so that they know how to score 100. That is the area I think Bangladesh cricket needs to work out and needs to work out fast, especially in test cricket.
Absolutely. I think a strong first-class domestic structure and a strong first-class competition domestically is absolutely vital for the strength of a test team. And yeah, that's certainly an area that Bangladesh cricket needs to develop, and as you say, develop fast. Interested to pick up on something you were saying there, Oliver, about the players' hunger and desire. One thing that I thought was the difference between the teams and may ultimately have resulted in West Indies winning, I think at the vital moments, they actually showed more self-belief. They showed more confidence. They showed more kind of desire, really, to win. So if you think about that last day chase at Chottagram, and also, you know, the last day at, or the fourth day at Dhaka as well, when they were bowling Bangladesh, I just thought they showed more kind of self-belief and desire to win. Johnny, moving to you, if you were to pinpoint one particular reason for Bangladesh's failure, what would it be for you?
Well, I mean, it's easy, to be perfectly honest. If you take the squads that were presented, Shakib's loss is enormous. You're talking about one of the world's great all-rounders. He's right up there, and he's been at the top of the world game with bat and ball in all formats for a very long period of time. There's no chance that the West Indies would have chased 395 if he was in the side bowling well. He bowled beautifully in the one-day series. He is a proven international world-class player. And his runs, of course, you know, at the top order, you miss those. You really do. Those kind of contributions. And if you think of the margins were tight, 3 wickets, I think the West Indies won by in that first test. And admittedly, you know, at some stage, it looked quite as if they were going to coast it. But that, you know, 3 wickets and 17 runs, they are tiny margins in Test cricket, tiny margins. You take one world-class player out of that Bangladesh side, as you did with Shakib, and there's your answer.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like you say, if you were to put a positive spin on it, you would say that, you know, if you took away Myers's amazing 210 debut knock out of the equation, if you took maybe sort of Cornwall out of the equation on the in the Dhaka test, then really, you know, I guess Bangladesh would have ended up on top.
Just a quick thing on Cornwall. You know, he's a serious player. Now, he has taken 24 wickets in the last 3 test matches in Asia. 24. I mean, that, you know, we're talking somebody from the West Indies. They are extraordinary numbers. They really are. You know, 10 against, of course, Afghanistan, who, as Bangladesh found out in 2019, extremely dangerous in those kind of conditions. 9, you know, 14 wickets in this series. He is a global superstar in those conditions, without a doubt.
For sure. And nice segue into talking about some of those match winners for the West Indies, including Rakeem Cornwall. Let's stay on Cornwall then, because I think one of the things I was most impressed about, certainly on as it turned out, the last day in the Dhaka test, was just his calmness, his control, and just being an absolute workhorse, just plugging away at the same end over after over, just kind of generating a slight bit of variation in terms of bounce, slight bit of variation in terms of turn, which ultimately kind of brought him all those wickets. But just a question to you, Omibai, why are you surprised that someone like Rakeem Cornwall, in effect, out bowled the Bangladesh spinners?
To be honest, no, because it's a better team that eventually won the series and both the matches. Rakeem Cornwall, he said to the press conference that I try to keep things simple. I try to bowl in the perfect areas and utilize the bounce. And that is the area that the Bangladeshi bowlers were not able to bowl consistently. Yes, we have quite a few good spinners in the side, but if you don't bowl consistently at one area and if you continue to bowl a bad ball or a short ball every single over, then ultimately, the pressure releases from the batsman, right? So the more you bowl at the right area, then Cornwall did exactly that. And he knew he didn't have to do anything else. If the batsman make mistakes, he just have to ask questions. So he just kept it simple. And it's also important you have a good bowling partner at the other end. And the likes of Jomel Warrican, even Craig Brathwaite, when coming into the second test, the way he picked up the 2 openers, that was phenomenal. You know, so who would have thought that Craig Brathwaite would come in and dismiss both the openers and all of a sudden the game changes? So that's the beauty of the game. But the more they were very consistent. That's the area I should mention. And I should also mention Nkrumah Bonner, the way this guy batted. Every single inning, he was like, he didn't want to throw away his wickets. And he tried to utilize the opportunities that he got. Even if the second innings of the second test, where he scored around 30 odd runs, he never wanted to throw away his wicket except that reverse sweep. I don't know why he played that, but he was really impressive. And all the 3-4 youngsters, even Joshua Da Silva, the wicketkeeper, playing just his third or fourth test match here in Bangladesh, and the way he tried to hang in there, added 100 plus partnership in crucial situations. And talking about Bangladesh's partnership, only 200 plus partnership took place between the Bangladeshi batters, and only one session in the entire 2 test matches they were able to bat without losing a wicket. So these are the areas where West Indies were far ahead from Bangladesh. And eventually we are saying that the Kyle Mayers actually changed the game in the last day of the first test match, but they keep their chances high because they were in the game even till the last moment. So that is why you give credit to West Indies. They were clearly the clear favorites when it comes to the field.
Yeah, I think I agree with what you say there. I think in terms of the relative performance of the spinners, I mean, I didn't think Tigel bowled well, actually, throughout the series, picked up 12 wickets. Mehdi as well, picked up 8 wickets in that first test, didn't bowl so well in the second test, but ended up with 10 wickets as well. So I don't think they bowled badly as such. I think where they struggled was initially in the first innings of the Dhaka test, where, you know, they'd lost the toss, they're coming on to bowl, and they just lost the previous test, what, about 4 days previously, and they spent a long time in the field. No doubt they were probably demoralised after that loss. So, yeah, they were up against it then. But generally, I thought they bowled okay. I think, yeah, where they kind of lacked was to really kind of come up with a match-winning spell and to kind of, as you say, dislodge that really kind of stubborn West Indies middle order, people like Bonner, people like De Silva. Johnny, I wanted to come back to you. I don't think we can kind of have a review of the test series without talking about that innings from Myers. That 210 not out. I mean, phenomenal, phenomenal innings. But what amused me, I guess amused me slash kind of gave me a bit of a wry smile at the end of it was, you know, there was a lot on social media, rightly so, kind of focusing in on the knock. But I don't think actually a lot of people saw it from start to finish, just because, well, unless you live in Bangladesh and the Caribbean, Johnny, as you and I know, it's very difficult to, well, A, wake up at 3:30 in the morning to follow the camera, and then B, just find a feed that was showing it.
But good old Flick Sports did as well, didn't it? That's for sure.
I only found out about Flick Sports about 3 days into the first test. but yeah, it certainly worked for me. But yeah, the point I was making, I don't think a lot of people actually watch the innings in its entirety. But actually, there were chances to get him out, both at the end of the fourth day. He was dropped by the Fizz on the boundary. And also before he got to 50 on the last day, there were a couple of other chances as well. But, you know, I'm maybe like nitpicking there a little bit. But just put that kind of innings into context for us, Johnny.
Wow. I mean, where do you start? I think John Etheridge of The Sun, a very respected cricket journalist over here, described it as the foremost test innings of the 21st century. And I'm inclined to agree. There's been another double century in a chase, of course, Gordon Greenidge back at Lord's in 1984 when the West Indies chased down, I think, 380 on the final day. But this was, you know, this is a debutant, you know, in his first test in alien conditions, in a side, you know, with not going into the test with a great deal of confidence. It was an extraordinary effort to get 200 and to be there at the end, not to give your wicket away. He rode his luck a little bit. The ball, you know, went through the gully region where he was caught, of course, in that second test match on a number of occasions and through extra cover in the air. But still, you know, largely the way in which he approached it, the way he picked up the pace and his calculated risks towards the latter stage of that innings, when they needed to work at about 4 or 5 and over, his ability to hit the ball into the stands. I mean, it was staggering. For a debutant to do that in those conditions is just world-class and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, the number of records that he broke in the course of that innings were pages long. I'm not even going to try and cover those. What really impressed me, actually, about his knock, well, I think the partnership with Bonner was absolutely crucial. And I think the fact that Bonner was there for most of the time that he was there was absolutely crucial to his innings.
The key thing there, to be honest, of the final day was you need, you know, from a West Indies point of view, you need as quiet as possible start. So many times you've gone into, you know, the final day or day four of a test match where you're chasing an enormous number and there's a flurry of wickets in those first two sessions. A wicket didn't fall for the first two sessions. That was the bottom line behind that West Indies win. And all credit, of course, to Myers and Bonner.
Absolutely. And just one last thing on that innings. What impressed me about Bonner as well as Myers during that partnership, I remember just after Myers got to 100, clearly, you know, he was fueled with adrenaline, fueled with energy. The next three balls, he went for three enormous swipes outside the off stump, could have easily got caught behind or somewhere in the deep. Immediately after that happened, Bonner went up to him mid-pitch, had a bit of a chat, obviously tried to settle him down. And really from that moment on, he just looked so determined, so focused to win the game, as he did. Omibai, just turning to you, was there anything you feel that Bangladesh could have done to kind of stop that partnership, stop that innings? I mean, obviously people are talking a lot about the captaincy approach from Mominal in the field on that last day. Maybe he went too defensive too early. Was there anything else they could have done to try and get those wickets?
When you went up losing 395 bin chase as a captain, it's all against you. Even if you do everything right, but something goes against you, it's everything against you now. So the best part was that the way Mayers handled after being getting those opportunities early on, and he never thought that they would not win the game. He always was in the game and he was always trying to play his shot. If once on his innings, if he thought that I can't do this or it's not my job or I can't be able to reach that, I'm happy with my 100 and that's all I did, and it's a great achievement scoring 100 on debut. That's the thing, his mentality has actually changed from a young new debutant to a very matured head who can actually change the course of the game, scoring a double 100 and scoring 395 in the last day of a test match. That is the one area you need to give credit to Mayers. But yeah, as you mentioned, that there were a few moments where Mominal Haque could have been more aggressive. And I think the way he just put the fielders down to the long on, down to the deep mid-wicket region, even there were no intentions of stopping the singles. Once you stop those singles, then the big shots might come and then there will be a few chances. So those are the periods I think the captain had to come up and step up and do something different. As Craig Brathwaite did, he introduced himself with the ball and all of a sudden two wickets fell and the game changed suddenly. So there was no intention from the captain that time. Probably he's a very young as a captain playing just his fifth test match. I don't want to be so harsh on him. But yeah, at times you have to apply your game senses. If you are a batsman, what you have done, what would bother you as a batsman when someone come against you? What are the areas you wanted to fill up as a batsman? Like the opponent want to expose that area, then you need to fill those gaps. You need to know as a player as well, not just about the captain. As a batsman, when you go out there, you should realize what are the areas you might face. So yeah, there are the areas, but at the same time, the Bangladesh, the way they expected the pitch to turn, it didn't actually turn that way. And the spinners were actually waiting for the pitch to give something more, which they had been expecting. And that is the one area, even captain said that the pitch didn't turn as much as we expected. So there are matter of skills. If I talk about Ravichandran Ashwin, if I talk about Nathan Lyon, even if there's nothing on the pitch, they try to do something different. That is the way you become great bowler. It's not just about the surface that makes you great. So this is the area that I think the Bangladeshi spinners need to work on when they go abroad. Yes, we have our home advantage and we could tailor-made pitches and we could turn the batsman around. But when you go abroad, you need to bank on your skill as well. So I think it's been a mixed thing. Not just I won't blame about only the captain, only the selectors or only the spinners. I think they need to come up with a collective approach as a unit when they play test cricket.
Definitely. I think, yeah, like you say, it's a real learning curve for...
It's been 20 years now we have been learning test cricket.
True, absolutely, yeah. So, although I always say to people, 20 years, if you look at the grand scheme of things, in terms of the history of test cricket and how long other teams have been playing test cricket, 20 years is just a drop in the ocean. So, yeah, Bangladesh are, yeah, they've been playing for 20 years, but still, I would say, quite relatively young in terms of experience terms in test cricket. But, yeah, certainly a learning curve for a young captain like Mominal. I hope he takes away lots of lessons learnt.
He's under tremendous pressure, man. You have no idea here in Bangladesh. Everyone wants a piece of Mominul Haq. They don't want the captain anymore. Yeah, man, it's terrible here.
Well, yeah, certainly when the president of the board starts questioning your credentials, then yeah, you are under a lot of pressure. But let's turn to some of the positives for Bangladesh in terms of some of the more positive performers throughout the series. I'm just going to pick a couple. I think both Mehdi Hasan and Litton Das really kind of improved or increased their stature throughout the series. I think, firstly, in terms of Mehdi, his century there in the first innings of the first test to kind of set up that big total was a fantastic innings. Just also coming in at number eight when, you know, the innings was in trouble of maybe subsiding to quite a low score. He kind of came up with that innings and kind of proving himself to be a genuine all-rounder potentially now. So that kind of really excites me. And also Litton Das, I think just the way he contributed in that middle order, again, when those above him were kind of regularly failing, I think he really provided some valuable runs in the middle order. Johnny, let's come to you. Any kind of reflections on those two performers?
Stunning. I think, you know, the seventh wicket, wasn't it, in both test matches was worth over 100 runs. That tells you everything. I think Mehdi Hasan Miraz, I mean, he's a serious frontline all-rounder. You know, score 100 under real pressure. You know, Bangladesh were in, you know, 144 for four, weren't they, in that first test match, and looking to subside. You know, West Indies looking for wickets. You know, to get that kind of score that they did, get up above 400, was largely down to him. And he, of course, kept them, Bangladesh, competitive in the second game. I thought it was a brilliant performance with bat and ball. You know, 200 runs, 10 wickets. I mean, you cannot ask for anything more. And in the process became the quickest player to 100 wickets in tests, which is a terrific accolade to have when you think of the likes of sort of Imran Khan and Ian Botham and others who were very, very quickly to that milestone. Litton Das, I thought, batted really nicely as well through the course of the test. You know, fine margins in these two test matches. Although Bangladesh lost by 2-1, you could argue there were some mistakes, I think, from the makeup of the side. I would have kept the fears, as I've mentioned before. But, you know, certainly some positives, absolutely. And Mehdi Hasan Miraz was the big one.
Yeah, interesting that in the test match that's just concluded between England and India in Chennai, the second test, someone called Ravi Chandra Ashwin, who I'm sure everyone knows, has taken eight wickets and scored a century, as did Mehdi in that first test. But, yeah, you know, I don't think anyone really heard about it or was too bothered about it, unfortunately. So I think, yeah, that just goes to show, an amazing test match he had, rightfully winning the Man of the Match award for that test. But also, as I say, the potential, I feel, to become a real kind of frontline all-rounder. Homi Bhai, just interested in your thoughts on both Mehdi and Litton.
Mehdi has been terrific, both with bat and ball. But the best part was the way he believed in his batting. He's been a very good batsman during his age table days. He was the man of the series in the 2016 under 19 World Cup, both scoring runs and picking up wickets. But since then, when he get into the national team, he was mainly an off spinner in the test side. And his batting credentials had been slowly but gradually has been going down, and even he himself was not able to believe that he can score a good knock or he can score a big 100, because he himself used to think that I'm a bowler, my first job is to bowl, and then if it happens to go out there and score some runs, I can do that. But the way he backed his technique in the test series, the way he used his high elbow going right on top of the ball, trying to play a long innings, patience, that's the thing we need to see from a batsman. And he did it very, very well. So that's the best part from Mehdi Hasan Miraz. And he has got the ability. It's not that he's not got the ability. He used to be mainly a batsman right from the start of his career. So it's a very good sign for Bangladesh that someone like Mehdi is now started to believe that he can score hundreds. And it was his first 100. And obviously, when you score the first one, it actually breaks the barrier. And then you go on to score some more. So that's the best part of a batsman there. And as a bowler, I really believe he can improve a lot from what he has now. I think he really needs to work on the dusra or some other variations. As only off spin and banking on the wicket, it's quite difficult, though, if you don't have those height, right? Rakim Cornwell has. So that's an advantage that he doesn't have. So he really needs to work on. But he's a very bright prospect, no doubt about it. And Litton Das as well. It's been terrific in the Bangabandhu T20 Cup. He looks to be a fine batsman when he's on song. The way he gets some lot amount of time when he go out there and bat. But I think it's important for them, these two youngsters, to realize that they have already spent 3 to 4 years in international cricket, and now they need to lift their game a bit further now. They're not a youngster now. They're not a newcomer in the team. And now they have to play the responsibility and play the knocks, the match-winning knocks, much like Shakib does, much like Tamim does, much like Mahmudul Riyad does. If they one or two guys started to do this thing, they will start gaining belief that, yes, we can be the match winners as well. So it's definitely a very good sign. And I would also like to mention Abu Jayed. He's been under tremendous pressure, was dropped in the first test, despite picking up 4 wickets in his previous test match. I don't know why he was dropped, but the way he came up and bowled in the second test, it was really impressive. So yes, there are a few positives, and this will certainly help Bangladesh cricket in further times.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge Abu Jayed Rahi fan. So yeah, really pleased to see him get those wickets in the second test. And like you say, I just hope he gets a lot more opportunity going forward. And yeah, just a really good point you make about continual improvement and continual learning and continual development for players like Mehdi and Litton, and, you know, not being satisfied with reaching a certain level and kicking on to that next level, absolutely. But yeah, hopefully there are some kind of bright signs for Bangladesh going forward. So just, I wanted to wrap things up, I guess. But before I do, I guess the final kind of question was around looking forward into the future. So firstly, from a West Indies perspective, Johnny, I'll come to you. What next for the West Indies in terms of Red Bull cricket? As we know, lots of first choice established names chose not to call for various reasons. We're not going to go into those. But they were absent. So what now happens to them? Obviously, we've seen people like Bonner, people like Mayers, people like De Silva, people like Cornwall performing fantastically. Surely they should be given a run in the team.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be honest, one of the things I was saying sort of when we did the wrap-up on Flow Sports, actually, is I thought, well, these are the kind of problems that you yearn for, where you've got a squad with players that can come in and do the job. I don't think in anybody's wildest dreams did they expect two, in the shape of Bonner and Carl Mayers to come into the side and perform so extraordinarily well. Rakim Cornwell's got a little bit more experience, and also Joshua De Silva's now in his third test, but my gosh, every time he goes out there, he seems to get better and better and better. And I think all you could ever want, really, is competition for places and to have a squad where people are looking, to some extent, looking over their shoulder. And the IPL and other tournaments will always be a factor. The West Indies board, interesting enough, have signed off some really quite big broadcasting deals recently, one with BT Sports over in the UK, one with ESPN, both worth around about 5 years. And it's that kind of money and revenue that comes in, which will allow them to kind of keep the squad hungry and mean that the IPL will probably play, I mean, it'll still play a large part in things, but they'll still be able to get players onto the park, get them playing for West Indies. And this has been a historic problem. You only have to look at the T10 recently, which was dominated by West Indies performances all the way through. And none of them, of course, play in any format, particularly for the West Indies. So I think this is a really, I think it's a turning point. I think it was a turning point when they beat England at home. I think this is another turning point to win on their travels, only their second win since they won in Bangladesh in 2012-13. I think it's exciting times ahead. But obviously, you know, the couple of key battles for the West Indies, one of which is to try and galvanise those players that opted to miss out and to appease their fears about missing out or the problems and why they missed out. Largely, it's of course, it's bubble fatigue with COVID, and there's the IPL and various other leagues that will attract players. And two, just to, you know, to put a big hand around the players that have just come into this side and say, you are part of our future. You know, we see West Indies moving forward very much with you at the front and forefront of this squad.
Yeah, like you say, John, it's certainly a nice problem for the West Indies to have and the West Indies selectors to have in terms of accommodating all the bright new things that have emerged over the last few months or few weeks even. But only by coming to you then finally in terms of looking ahead in the future for Bangladesh Test cricket. So as I understand it, there might be a Test series scheduled against Sri Lanka coming up after the White Ball Tour of New Zealand. Just looking ahead to the next Test series, whoever that might be against, do you feel that finally the selectors will kind of ditch the spin-heavy focus that has kind of dominated Bangladesh cricket?
I think they need to balance the act. Spin has been our strength, but at the same time, two different type of fast bowlers can give you different variety in the bowling attack. So you need to keep that in mind as well. And there have been talks, Russell Dominguez has been saying that we want to emphasize on the fast bowling department over the next few years or so. And there are quite a few fast bowlers who are coming in the rank, but it's important you make them play. Otherwise, there's no point having fast bowlers in the squad and you play only one seamer in the lineup. And the other thing is you need to come over from what India did. Yes, they also bank on their spin strategy, but at the same time, they've also developed a couple of fast bowlers who can bowl 145K in Australia and win test matches there. So India is there, the big example for Bangladesh if they want to improve their protein in test match cricket. And it's important to have a good mindset, and how you see the test match cricket is very important. Not just about the board selectors, it's the players who need to realize that how important this test match is. And red ball cricket, it gives a lot of joy as a player, more than limited over format.
It certainly does. I think it gives a lot of joy to the fans and the supporters who watch as well. I mean, the climaxes to both of these tests were absolutely gripping and nail-biting. But yeah, agree with what you say, Omibai. I think for me, the biggest thing for Bangladesh Test cricket going forward is to really actually learn the lessons of this series. I think too often in the past, what's happened is they've lost a Test series or they've drawn a Test series, and they've just kind of forgotten about it and, you know, concentrated, as you say, on the white ball, not really tried to kind of address some of the problems that certainly exist. So, yeah, my hope is that going forward, lots of the lessons will be learned, that, like you say, the players and the selectors and the board really take a serious look at how things have panned out and how they can improve going forward. But thank you both very much. I'm going to wrap things up for now. I'm sure we could talk for a lot longer. As I say, a fantastic test series to watch. And as you say, Johnny, it really was fine margins, quite conceivable.
Three wickets and 17 runs, scraps, nothing between the two.
Quite conceivably, you know, Bangladesh could have won 2-0.
Absolutely.
Yeah, our discussion would be totally different, no doubt. So, yeah, that's something to bear in mind as well, the perspective of everything as well. But thank you so much, both of you. I'm sure we'll be talking again at some point in the future very soon. Thanks a lot and goodbye.
Thank you very much. Been a pleasure talking both to you. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Jordan.